Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives, sharing their expertise and life stories, making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. So what did travel writers do when their wanderings were halted while sheltered at home during COVID lockdown? I know what one travel writer did. She went through a decade's body of work, more than 140 essays, and selected, tweaked, and reworked some of her favorites to compile a new book. It's called A Hard Place to Leave: Stories from a Restless Life. Marcia DeSantis joins me today to share some of her adventures and insights into being a travel writer. She shares why she loves the desert, how she balances her introverted self with writing open, honest, personal stories, and how she finds the stories that really resonate while she travels the globe. Marcia DeSantis is a contributing writer at Travel and Leisure. She writes essays and stories for Vogue, Town and Country, Departures, BBC Travel, and the list goes on. She received the 2021 Grand Solis Award for Travel Story of the Year and has received 5 Lowell Thomas Awards for Excellence in Travel Journalism, including one for Travel Journalist of the Year. She's the New York Times bestselling author of 100 Places in France Every Woman Should Go, one of my favorite countries. We didn't get a chance to talk about that today, but we did talk about her latest book, A Hard Place to Leave: Stories from a Restless Life. And here's my guest, Marcia DeSantis. Marcia DeSantis, welcome to the show. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Vicki. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I was reading your travel book, and just, I've always had the travel book, the bug, and I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I have this longing to get back out on the road, but have some business to take care of first.
Right, don't we all?
And so, you've got such an interesting background. You worked in broadcast news. You were a producer for ABC, 60 Minutes, Dateline. You worked with Barbara Walters at 2020 and the Barbara Walters special for a number of years. How did you like that, and at what point made you make the switch?
I loved working in broadcast news. I think it's the best thing that a young person can do, and a lucky young person, actually. And I did it for 20 years. I started at my first job, actually, was working for Barbara as her assistant. I was a summer replacement for her assistant, who, you know, just took some time off. And then I went over to work for World News Tonight with Peter Jennings, and that was, you know, the time of the three, you know, the Mount Rushmore, Peter Jennings, Dan Rather, and Tom Brokaw,
right,
you know, the
right.
6:30 evening news. And then I moved around a lot, and, I was never a particularly good soldier. I moved up, and I moved over, and I moved around, and went to different broadcast networks, but always sort of ended up with Barbara Walters. And I really made the switch because I don't want to say because I had kids, but it's really because I moved out of New York City. So I worked for 60 Minutes in Paris, moved back to New York, had a couple of kids, and moved out to the country to really a quite a rural area of New England, northwestern Connecticut, which is kind of below the Berkshire Mountains, and really couldn't do it anymore. And it was also just a great chance to say, I've always written, I always wanted to be a writer. I had 14 unfinished novels. I shouldn't really say that, kind of 14.
Hey, that's okay.
10 pages or 15 or 20 pages of novels, and I was kind of out of excuses. And I said, you know, if I'm not going to be, I've always wanted to write. I've always kind of identified as a writer. And then I thought, if I don't do it now, when am I ever going to do it? I mean, the time is just going to keep slipping away. And I just, I think having regrets is one thing. Anticipating regrets is another thing. So you kind of want to nip that in the bud. So that's what happened. I just went to it and said, you know, what's the worst that can happen? You fall on your face multiple times, which I did. And, you know, and you just keep on going.
Yeah. And I love that you said that, you know, regrets are one thing, anticipating regrets are a whole other thing, because if we can see those regrets coming, we have nobody but ourselves to blame.
Well, I agree with that. And I think it is something that age brings you, and, you know, the benefit of hindsight is wanting to do things over again. The realization that time is, that you can't afford to waste any more time, that time is very precious, and
yeah.
that all of these things that you want to take a crack at, if you don't do it, you're gonna have those regrets. So I do think that not having much time to waste is one of the real kind of net benefits of aging. I also think that being a writer is so fraught with so much, honestly, so much judgment and risk and disappointment in a way. I mean, the benefits are great too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when things click, but I think that kind of, you know, it's not necessarily a field that's going to like say, "Hey, good job," all the time.
Right.
And I think that that the kind of, you know, the kind of emotions that arouses, the kind of experience of, okay, I'm going to keep on going, is at least for me not something I think I would have been able to do in my 20s. I would have said like, "Ugh, this is for the birds. I mean, I want to go somewhere where people appreciate me and people want, you know, are always saying like, yeah, great, we love this." So I do think that determination is another thing that comes, with age, because I thought, all right, so if someone doesn't like it, I'm going to send it to someone else and I don't care. So you sort of earn a bit of self-confidence just because you're just trucking right on through.
Right, right. Well, the book is what I would describe a travel memoir. Let's talk about the title of that, A Hard Place to Leave, Stories from a Restless Life, because it's a brilliant title because it does describe the book. Tell us a little in your own words about the book.
Well, the book is, A Hard Place to Leave is something I think we've all said 1,000 times. And you know, you're leaving Paris and you're saying, man, it's really hard to leave here. I mean, I can't believe I have to go.
One of my favorites.
And I think, yeah, we've all said it 1,000 times. And it just kind of, you know, it's just a title I really wanted for the book. And I was very surprised it hadn't been taken yet by some other travel writer. It was actually, I was reading a book by, a book of travel essays by Willa Cather that she wrote in 1902 before she was Willa Cather, and the expression was used, she actually did say Paris is a hard place to leave, even with the incessant rain and all the coughing and all that, and I just circled it 1,000 times and said, you know, isn't everywhere. And so the book really represents what I would call a body of work, at least a portion of a body of work. I had my first major byline, I would say. And I had been doing things for the Huffington Post, which involves no editing and no pay, actually. It was just kind of things that I wanted to write about. But my first major byline was with Vogue the year that I turned 50. And the pandemic had just started when I was about to turn 60 when the pandemic started, and I was working on a bigger, more... a memoir about also a travel memoir, but a very different kind of thing, very specifically about my family. And the year that I was turning 60 was, yes, the year of the pandemic, and I really didn't have the concentration to go back into this memoir I had just written and, you know, break it wide open and work on it. I was very obsessed, like the rest of us, with safety and worry and grief and all of those things. And I thought, you know, a couple of people had suggested, you know, why don't you do a collection of your stories? And I just thought this might be the time to do it. And I kind of spread it all out before me, literally spread it all out before me, printed you know, printed documents of about 140 essays and stories I had written in the last 10 years. In the 10 years that I had actually been a writer, the age 50 to the age of 60, a decade of work. And I wasn't really expecting it to be mostly travel stories. It's interesting because I sometimes am called or maybe have kind of my strongest and maybe most high-profile stories in the travel realm, but I've written lots of stories about a lot of other things. But it really seemed that the media stories, the stories that really are about life right. and the meaning of life and aging and parenting and discovery and experience and adventure and reflection, I really feel like those stories really happen when I travel and in my travel writing. So it ended up, yes, being more of a travel memoir than anything else. The stories take place all over the world, but by no means are not a compendium of all the wonderful places I've been and places I've been on assignment, but they're stories that, you know, start off taking place in the very distant past. In the distant past. And those were kind of the first travel stories that I wrote. They were kind of culled from my diaries. And then I come home very frequently during the book, and there's this kind of push and pull of exits and entrances and arrivals and departures and comings and goings. And so there is always the lore of elsewhere. As soon as I get home, I'm starting to think about where I need to go next or where I need to find a story next. So the book begins in Moscow, where I spent a lot of time in my 20s. At this point, the story took place almost 40 years ago, and that it really ends when I'm kind of a full-blown citizen of the world and travel writer who is just always trying to find a reason and a way to get somewhere. And in this case, it was to North Dakota to knock on doors and work on a Senate campaign, because I knew that while I was there that I would find a story. And of course, when you spin out on a snowy highway in the middle of the night, there's a story there. So that's how the book ends.
Yeah. And I love one of the stories, and some of the stories are longer than others. I loved this one for some reason. I think it was Stranger on a Train, when you went back to Russia as an adult and you were remembering how your parents had, you know, waved you off on your first trip in Russia. And then you get bunked with some guy, some stranger.
Right. A very big guy, too.
Yes.
And he was really, and those bunks are a foot apart from each other. Yeah. I'm so glad you liked that story, and I'm so glad you asked about it, because it's a very short story. That one was published before. That was actually in the New York Times about 10 years ago. So about two-thirds of the stories were previously published, not all of them in such high-profile places as the Times. Some were very kind of obscure literary journals. But the interesting thing about that story, I think, is maybe many-fold. One, not much happens. It's really kind of a classic experience about how when you travel, you have to have an open heart. You just, what is the point if you're not opening yourself up to other people, right. other experiences, kind of the beauty of the unexpected moment. The other thing about it is exactly what you said, is a return. I love return stories because they have, in a way, a built-in narrative. They have kind of a restraint. They have a they're sort of returns are themselves in an enclosure, and in the sleeping compartment on the overnight train from Moscow to Leningrad or St. Petersburg. That dates me a little bit, but it's still called St. Petersburg, Leningrad. But I mean, there's no more kind of profound enclosure than the sleeping car on a train, on an overnight train. So it's both narratively has kind of constraints and restraints, but also just literally, physically. And the other thing is that I do have a lot of stories. It was how I was originally going to break up the book, by kind of subject or by theme or by kind of the dominant, you know, the dominant thread. And one of the categories was going to be angels, because there are some people that you encounter along the way that really disappear very quickly, and you think maybe they were put in your path for some kind of significant reason. So I felt like this guy was one of those people that you don't have to be alone. You don't have to be. Life is much richer when you share it with somebody else, especially something as profound as a white knight across the Russian north. So I felt like that person, this man Igor, had kind of inadvertently opened my eyes to really what travel can be.
Yes, and I think that came across, which is one of the reasons I loved it. I also loved it because, as a writer myself, you know, when you start out, and it's something I struggled with, you always think you've got to have this big story. It's got to be a big story. But I was talking with Matthew Dix a couple of weeks ago, and he's a Moth Champion winner many times. What is it? The Moth Grand Slam. And he insists that the best stories are the small stories. And this was a small story, but it was profound. And so that's one of the reasons I pulled that particular story out to talk about today.
Well, thank you. And it is interesting, because a small story in a really surprising place, I think. And I'm a big fan of quiet narrative. I think maybe the world isn't, but I am. I'm glad to hear that Matthew was too. Of course, I know who he is.
Yeah. And so you're very open in this book. You talk about some things that a lot of people wouldn't talk about, and you probably know where I'm going with this, but you talk about when you went back to school because you were, you know, not sure, what do I want to do? I don't have the courage to publish my novel, so what do I want to do? And you went back to school, and you are a married woman of 16 years, and you fall in love with another guy. And you know, the person that you take solace in, really, you turn to your husband for comfort during that period, which is also very poignant. I'm wondering, is that something that comes naturally? Because I remember reading a couple of times that you referred to yourself as an introvert. Is it hard for you to open up like that and be that open on paper?
It's such a good question, and something that I think about a lot. And that particular story was the essay in question. It was really the essay that started my career. It was published in Vogue. It was one of those stories that only I could tell, and I think it was a story that was published because it was very honest. I think the thing about writing about yourself and writing about vulnerability, and especially when it involves someone else, you know, my husband, this really great guy, he who did forgive me, who kind of almost felt a little sorry for me, because I think he kind of knew me well enough to know that he didn't diminish it. I mean, sometimes these emotional connections are more powerful than physical ones that happen, and it was a very deep love with this person, a great deep connection with this person who really reminded me, I mean, it was midlife, I was hormonal, and really reminded me of the person, the people that I used to be around as a journalist, you know, running around Europe, running around the Middle East, and it was that person that I was losing and felt like I had lost in, you know, in just motherhood and domesticity and things like that. But I think by the time that I wrote this story, the situation was behind us, and I gave it to my husband and I showed my kids, and my husband was kind of saying, you know, it's actually kind of a relief to read about it, because it means that, he's like, it was just so much worse to live through it than it is right. to read about it. He's right. like, you know, I just don't have any problem reading about it, because it was just so much worse when we were in it. It's like, it's so nice that it's written in the past tense and something that's done. But I think that was a very important experience. It was a very important moment in my life and marriage. It was also the turning point for me that made me really made me a writer, that made me push as a writer, that made me kind of find a way to keep my marriage and my relationship new and fresh. And one of those ways was to find a way to leave occasionally and just have absence make the heart grow fonder. I think that writing about your personal life, I think that there probably are some boundaries that I don't cross. I think certain intimate things, and definitely some things about my children, even some things about, you know, the family that I grew up in, my sisters and mom and dad. I think there are some things that some lines I won't cross, but for the most part, it felt like something that was behind me and easy, and I was just writing it from such a place of relief. And by the way, it's now 10, 11 years old, and I still get mail on it maybe once a week. It's such a universal story.
Yeah, it touches a lot of people, I think.
It touches a lot of people. Yeah. And I mean, I get desperate emails from people saying, you know, do you have time to talk? You know, are you? And I always say, you know, I'm so happy you reached out. Good luck. It will get better. It will be behind you sometime. I actually made a very good friend from Reader Mail, who, she was just kind of persistent, and I liked her, and we had a lot in common, because she also had a master's in foreign policy and met her longed for lover at graduate school in foreign policy. So it's pretty universal.
Yeah,
I think these kind of wanderings, especially at the beginning of menopause, at the beginning, you know,
yes.
life, you know, long marriage.
Yeah, and you've spent so much of your time, you know, people do spend so much of their time raising their kids and putting, you know, building a career and putting other people first, and then suddenly, I mean, I've seen it in men too. It's not just women who have, I know you weren't empty nest at the time, but it's not just women who go through empty nest. You know, I know a couple of men very close to me who went through big time empty nest syndrome and did all kinds of strange stuff, but came back eventually. So I read that the desert is a sweet spot for you when you're seeking solitude, even if it's a location you probably shouldn't be hiking alone, you say. I'm thinking of
right.
the rattlesnake story.
Right. I still hike alone there, and it's crazy.
Well,
I do love the desert, and I think that it's funny. I think you go through these phases in your life. I mean, to really, really simplify it, are you mountain, ocean, or desert? You know, of course, there's like all the cities of the world, but let's just take these wildernesses. And I used to be the beach and the ocean, and that's just completely all, you know, that's the only place I wanted to be. And I think as I got older, I think that emptiness is something that I really crave in a way. I love the hot days and the cool nights. I love the barrenness, and I like I just like the mystery and permanence of these landscapes, and I love just infinite views and the colors in the sky, and I think in a way it is a way that as I've gotten older, I've gotten closer to my father, who was raised in Arizona, and the desert was a very big part of his life growing up. And when we were kids, I'm the youngest of four sisters, but we used to go there every summer and just really go to the Grand Canyon, go to Southern Utah, go to all of these landscapes. And then I felt like, oh, I kind of did that. You know, I've been to the American West, but I've definitely found that I want to go back there. And I just think also just the sky and the stars.
Oh, at night, it's just spectacular.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. And so the year after I wrote, not even the year after, I think it wasn't even 6 months after I wrote that story about Big Bend, which I adapted for the book about Big Bend National Park, I went back. I really was just so taken by the place, and I went and spent a month in Marfa, Texas, which is quite close to Big Bend, and it was where I started to really, really do the nitty-gritty of putting this book together.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote a couple of new essays there, and I did hike alone, but I was always... I had kind of learned my lesson because I wasn't hiking. And the thing about hiking out there is everywhere is a national forest or a preserve or a state park or something
like that.
So I always told the ranger or the person at the kiosk or something, like, hey, I'm here alone. And they always thanked me. They said, thank you, and they had my cell phone number and things like that. But I just... The desert is the head clearingest place on earth for me.
Yeah, it's so... I love all nature, and they all have their unique aspects, but I had many camping weekends when I lived in San Diego. We'd drive way out to the desert and just lie awake watching the stars at night because it's so spectacular.
So spectacular. I actually don't know the California desert as much as I know the Arizona, Texas, New Mexico, even Colorado desert, but that's definitely something on my list.
Mm.
There's
so many advantages to traveling alone, and I've certainly traveled alone a lot. You travel light, for one. You pick your own agenda. You're not hanging around waiting for someone else to get ready. And I love the little story you shared of Hemingway and Fitzgerald in one of your essays. They had traveled together, and then Hemingway got home and told his wife, never go on trips with anyone you do not love.
Right.
But there are moments, and you wrote about this too, when the experience could be better for being shared with someone special. Do you ever go back to those with your husband and kids?
I actually did go back to Rwanda with my husband. It's a place that it's weird. I just ended up going there. I've been there 7 times since my first trip. And it's just a place I've really, really gotten to know. And I think what happens is that it's sort of like, as a travel writer, has become a little bit of a beat. I went there the first time actually to work for an NGO. Not work for an NGO, but do some work in partnership. They asked me to come. I financed my own trip, and I did some writing, storytelling, journalism lessons with some students at the University of Kigali. And while I was there, I was just starting out trying to be a travel writer, kind of looking for stories, and I found another story, and every time I go there, I find another story. And the last time I went back, actually the last story comes out this month in Travel and Leisure, or this coming month in Travel and Leisure, I did bring my husband, and it's an entirely different experience with somebody else. I mean, the difference is that I'm still there to work, and he is there to kind of have fun, and so he would go off and do some trek or do some hike, and I had to... talk to the sustainability guy and meet somebody at sunrise to go to the tree plantings and all the stuff that you do as a travel journalist or as a journalist, period. You're gathering material for a deep feature. And that I just find a little bit difficult to do with somebody because you're tired and you're not really, you're kind of giving everything you can to the work and possibly you're not as immersed in it as you would be. You might be sitting there talking about your kids or home, or like, hey, what did we decide to do about the roof? Are we gonna replace it? Are we gonna wait another year?
Right.
Just by nature of being with someone that
right.
you love. You're just kind of not 100% engaged or immersed,
right?
In the new landscape. But it was fun because I think he grew very curious about the country, and he did a ton of homework and read every book about President Kagame and about the genocide and things like that. So he was just, very, very interested. So that was fun.
Yeah.
He said that he probably had a better time than I did, but it just happens.
Well, you were working, and you talked about, you're always looking for stories. And I think one of the most important qualities of a good writer is their power of observation. And then, of course, how they translate that into words and stories. But I'm guessing, you're constantly on alert when you're meandering down side streets. And so what might spark a thought that, hey, this could be a possible story? Is it an organic feel for you? Do you get a little buzz, or is it more technical for you?
So it's an interesting process. I think it is organic, but what usually happens is something or a theme that repeats itself, that comes up again and again. And I guess the best example I could think about right now is a story I'm writing as I sit here, a story about Iceland in winter. And I mean, it's one, you just don't want these stories to be just and then I did this, and then I did that, and then I did this. But I found myself, I was there for a month in February, and I went there to really seek out winter. We haven't had very strong winters lately in New England, and I kind of just wanted to do something drastic, and I ended up going to a writing residency. And it was freezing cold. It was actually the worst winter Iceland has had weather-wise since 1980.
Oh, my gosh.
Which was perfect.
Did you go to the one in, like, February-ish?
Yeah. I went in February, and it was a writing residency in about an hour and a half north of Reykjavik. And what happened is I kept finding myself, I had wet hair the entire time I was there because I kept immersing myself in warm water.
Mm.
And I kept, everywhere I went, and then I left this place for a week and went to a series of hotels on assignment. And then I just, everywhere I went, like, let's go in the hot pot, let's go in the warm swimming pool. And so I just felt like, I think the theme of this is water.
Mm.
And so I had kind of the strange thing of always being in water in the Icelandic winter when you're actually, I mean, it was in my bathing suit half the time and my hair was frozen solid, but it was cold and icy, but I realized, I think this story is about water, so I just kept going back. So I think you're always trying to find a thread, you're always trying to find whatever it is, are you finding out the story of chocolate somewhere, are you finding out the story of, of people that have been here before you. So I think that the thread kind of reveals itself, and I think that's the best way to put it. There are times when I haven't really revealed myself till I've been home or even beyond that, but then when you're looking at your notes and this person keeps on bringing this up, this person keeps on talking about about something that happened here 10 years ago and how it's changed. So I do think that the threads are basically themes that repeat themselves and that, for me, become the story.
Mm. I asked about, the timing, because just a few years ago, there's an annual writers' conference up in Iceland, and then they do residences and retreats after that. And I was going to go, and I left it too late to book, so I never went.
I think it's called the Icelandic Writers Conference, maybe
something like that. Yeah, it's
this
quite
wasn't that. This is a really interesting residency that's gotten kind of popular. And it's just a house, and it's pretty no frills, but it's in this wonderful town, and within walking distance everywhere. And it was really odd because I had kind of booked it at the beginning of the pandemic, or applied for it, I guess, at the beginning of the pandemic, for maybe a year and a half later. It closed for a while. And about December, I went to book my flight, and it was when the Omicron variant just first revealed its horrific nightmare itself on the world right before Christmas, or the Christmas holidays last December. And I wrote her and I said, I'm thinking I'm supposed to come January 30th, and I don't know, it just feels really weird and scary to me right now. And she said, well, put it this way, everybody else is canceled, so you'll have
the hug. You'll be all by yourself, that would be great.
But actually, that sounds pretty great. And of course, no risk of COVID when you're alone in the house. So it was very dark. It was very solitary. There was one very young guy who's an American college student who was there for the month of January. But because there was now all this room in February, decided to stay a couple of weeks. But he by then was, spending a lot of time in Reykjavik. So I did have the house to myself, and it was very interesting. It was just this dreamy awake and sleep and awake and sleep because it was so dark, but I also was trying to wake up to see if the northern lights were out. Kind of wake, make sure I woke up at 1 o'clock and then stay awake for a couple hours, and of course that's really worth not sleeping.
Right. Most definitely.
Yeah, when you see the northern lights, you kind of think, all right, I'm good. I've lived my life. And then you see it 10 times and you think...
Yeah, it's surreal. I've seen them up in northern Canada and just incredible.
Isn't it?
It's spectacular. I was listening to a podcast this morning, this kind of motivational guy I listened to a bit, and he said, make sure you find awe in something as often as possible. And that is like awe that you can carry with you for a long time because it's so spectacular. You just can't believe it's real. It's incredible.
You just can't.
Yeah.
You just can't believe it's real. And then you think, all right, it's really cold out here. I think I better go back inside. Then you go back inside and you think, who am I kidding? This is the Northern Lights.
Right.
Suck it up.
When else are you going to see it?
Suck it up. There was one night that I just kept going inside and outside, and it was so icy and it was so cold, and I was by myself. And I just thought, this is just, you can't stay out here all night because you will freeze. But you can keep going back in and out and just make sure you have this experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, awe. I talk about a lot about awe and about sublimity and about, the awe. Sublimity maybe equals awe plus terror or awe, awe plus fear or something like that. But it's also a great thing to be aware of because it's kind of how you realize just how small you really are. And
absolutely.
And that there are all these forces that are so much greater than you and greater than, than anything on earth.
Yeah, and we forget that in the trudge of daily life, that we are just a little dot, a little speck of dust here. And also, we forget how beautiful the world is and how magical it is. And I think, it's great. And you've got some great stories in this book. You've traveled all over. Is there anywhere you haven't been yet that you really want to go?
Oh, my gosh. So many. so many. I would say... And it's weird because I've been to so many places multiple times. I obviously wrote a book about France. I lived in France. Quite a few stories in this book take place in France because it's territory I've gone over many times. And yet there's no story from Italy in this book, which is weird because I go there a lot, but it's also a place where I always have the most amazing time, and there's, even a flat tire, like, hey, it's Italy. It's a flat tire in Italy. But so I have thought a lot about how often I go back places. And actually, I want to start just going to all kinds of new places. So I am actually going to Egypt. I've never been to Egypt. I'm going there at the end of September. I really want to go to the Atacama Desert in Chile. And you just mentioned Western Northern Canada, a place I've never been. And I really, really want to go there. I got an email from somebody who represents, I guess, the British Columbia Tourism Board today, and I thought, wow, I wonder if I could make something like that work. But, and there are, of course, a lot of places in our own country that I haven't been. I'd really like to go to Northern Michigan. It always looks, whenever I see pictures of it, I say, wow, that's incredible. Where is that? Like, Northern Michigan, and you think, what? How can that be? Never been to Niagara Falls.
Right.
My parents went on their honeymoon and, you know, would like to go there to honor them sometime. So the list is endless.
Yeah, lots to look forward to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to ask you very quickly, because I know we're running a little long. Sorry about that. But do you have a favorite app, and what's one thing you pack when you travel that you would not want to be without?
Gosh, the one thing that I travel that I would not, I would say an extra blanket. I always travel with an extra blanket. It's actually a little down blanket that I just shove into my carry-on, and I use it more times. I'm always cold. I use it on airplanes. I use it waiting in. That's my dog, by the way, trying to summon me up. So I'd say an extra blanket is something I always bring. Lately, the app that I use all the time is not really an app, but it's the website Sherpa. And Sherpa is, I don't actually know who owns it or who runs it. I want to say maybe one of the insurance companies, or actually maybe they may be their own thing. Up to date, by the minute, to the minute, of COVID restrictions and COVID requirements. So Sherpa is something that is bookmarked on my computer. Other apps, I guess there's booking.com for those last minute hotel rooms, because I'm a hotel person rather than a stay-at-an-apartment kind of person. So that's about it. I mean, I could do a compendium of things that I carry in my carry-on, but blanket is probably number one.
Yeah. Well, I can understand that. When I went across Canada by train, I was like, do I need to take anything? No, they provide the blankets, and they did not. And I froze.
Oh, my gosh.
I froze.
Oh, my gosh.
I froze. But anyway, it's been such a pleasure talking with you. I know listeners can find out much more about you and all of your work at marciadesanctis.com. The book is called A Hard Place to Leave, Stories from a Restless Life. A final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with, Marcia?
I would say everybody can be a travel writer if they want to be. Keep your eyes open, keep a notebook, write with your five senses, and always try to make any trip more than a trip and figure out why you're traveling and what you hope to find.
Love it. Thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Vicki. It was really a pleasure.
If you have questions, comments, or feedback regarding today's podcast, you can reach me on our website at conversationslive.net. Thanks for joining us today. We'll have a new podcast go live next Wednesday. Until then, live well, live strong.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicki's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.